Your SteveJonesShow.com audio is coming up next. Audio and podcast of The Steve Jones Show, a service of Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is The Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And welcome to the show. It's great to have you with us on this Tuesday afternoon. Bottom of the hour, we're from one of the top baseball writers ever in Murray Chass. Looking forward to having him on. A little bit later in the week, we'll have Tim Benz on from Pittsburgh get a Steelers update. Jeff Lowe on a recap of the Olympics later in the week as well. So we have a bunch of things going on here today. And Kevin is alongside just being Kevin.
You know what I want to hear in the Steeler update?
Well, you want to hear about your Mike Wallace.
That's it. That's what I want to know.
Well, we'll have to find out now, won't we?
Well, as I said before, go in, sign it. Ben says he's been working out, has his helmet and everything, but it's not the same. If he holds out all training camp, he is not going to be up to speed by week one.
No, he probably won't be.
So sign the paper, go to training camp, get your job done, then start negotiating a new contract. That's my advice.
All right. Well, we'll find out if he takes your advice or not. I doubt he will.
I do, too. I mean, I would have done this a long time ago. But, again, here's a guy that had a good year last year, a Pro Bowl year. He's really, at the end of the year, did not, you know, stand out. I mean, you don't think he had a 100-yard game in the last eight games and went quite a long stretch without a touchdown. So to think that you're, you know, of elite status to get an enormous contract, that might be a little bit of a reach at this point in your career. If you put two or three of those years together and you're consistent and solid, then that's a different story.
Well, he's not. Well, not yet.
Not yet.
Well, yeah, not yet. But it's okay. Your Steelers are struggling and stammering along right now. Don't have the guy that the game breaker at wideout, and
still not 100% at running back.
No, I know.
And as you said the other day, I didn't expect Mendenhall to be ready for the opener, but
can't be physically impossible.
But, but on the other side of the state, at Lehigh, the Eagles have their own issues right now with injuries. I mean, it's been a long training camp already for the Eagles.
Well, they do have it. And, of course, yesterday we had Zach Berman on from the Philadelphia Inquirer that outlined all of this and more. So that's what, we've tried to give everybody, I think, every single angle of this so far. And that's what we're trying to do.
You know, the one thing we haven't talked about is the NFL officials and the lockout that could remain into the start of the regular season. Is that a bad thing? Is that something that the average fan will actually notice come the start of the NFL season? I'm not downplaying the officials' role or their position or anything. I'm just thinking, is that something that the fans will notice in week one?
Yes.
Okay. I'm just asking.
Fans are going to notice right away. I can tell you that right away they're going to notice. Look, when I go and I speak at various things, you know what the first things that people comment to me about all the time?
What's that?
Officials.
Yeah.
Quarterback club, you can always get a question all the time on the officials. All the time. It's the way it is. Okay.
I mean, I'll miss Ed Hockley. I mean, he's one I'll miss.
It's not
right
a question
away.
Of name. It's not a question of naming names. It's the competency of it.
But I watched the first half of the Steelers Eagles game. I thought, you know, there might have been one call that was missed in the first half. I think there was a face mask call that was missed. Nobody commented on the air, so maybe I just saw it wrong. But I mean, I didn't really notice or thought about the fact that they weren't NFL officials.
No, I thought about it and saw it right away, and I'll tell you exactly where I saw it.
Okay.
Hesitation.
Yeah.
You can see it takes longer, and I have more of an eye for this than most people would because I do minor league baseball.
Sure.
All right, and I there's certain things I see in minor league baseball umpires. I can tell a good one right away. You know, I can tell right away when it's a good one because they go at it right away. They make their decision quickly, and they're usually right about it. And I can see it. I can see when I watch an NFL game right now that there is hesitancy in some of the calls that are made. Now, it should be pointed out that the NFL has made an extremely generous offer for a part-time job.
Well, and the NFL, but the NFL wants to make them full-time, don't they?
Yeah, but they've made an extremely generous offer.
Okay.
I mean, they were making $8,000 a game. Multiply right. that times 20. Because the preseason counts.
Right.
It's $160,000 a year. How many of you out there have $160,000 a year jobs? Let's just do a quick little survey.
Part-time job.
Right. But I'm saying, you know, how many of you out there have that?
Do they pay their own expenses?
No, they get expense money on top of it.
Really?
Yes.
I did not know that.
It's one of the big bugaboos when it comes to college basketball officiating. It's not just the money they make, but it's also the expense money they get. And if they clear it, okay, they keep it.
So in other words, if you get $5,000 to make a trip from one end of the country to the other to do a game, and it only cost you $2,000, you've made $3,000.
Yep.
Wow. That is a sweet deal.
I'm just telling you how it works, okay? And that's how it works. And it's something I think a lot of fans don't realize.
I didn't. I mean, I knew they were part-time. I didn't realize what the dollar figure was, and I definitely didn't realize that they actually didn't have to pay their own way to get to different games.
Oh, no. They're all independent contracts, but at the same time, they... no, it's a sweet deal. Take my word. Sweet deal. And, you know, the NFL officials... Now, we had Bill Carollo on, as you recall.
Yes.
And Bill Carollo was actually the key in getting the last one settled. So that's, I find that to be, that was interesting.
Well, that he
was the key in getting the last one settled.
Give me an example. You were talking about the hesitation. Give me an example of the hesitation that you had seen in the NFL with the replacement officials.
That they
is it
wait
something you can describe?
Oh yeah, you can just see all of a sudden like and they look in and like okay, then they make a call, or they look in and they don't make a call. You can see they're not quite as sure of themselves.
Okay.
I mean, I can see it, and it's something I see in minor league umpires all the time. And I'm not putting down minor league umpires. There's a reason. It just takes you time to get used to what you're doing.
Well, they're getting ready to go to the next level.
Right. I mean, in what we do in our business, for example, there also is, you can tell when a younger announcer is not quite as sure of himself. And it comes out and it shows. You know, you can hear those little things, those little moments of uncertainty. And that's, you know, and you can hear that. Well, the same thing with an official. You can see the uncertainty. And it usually manifests itself in minor league baseball in the plate umpire. The plate umpire is the one that has more hesitancy than everybody else out there. And you can see it. Plate's a little bit wider. Longer to make a call because they're not quite sure. Is it high, low, knees, outside, inside? You know, you can see that. I see hesitancy in these officials as they're working games. That they're not. See, one of the keys to anything, whether you're playing, whether you're announcing, or whether you're officiating, all right, is that you have to believe what you see.
Or if you be confident in your call, you have to believe
what you're seeing.
Right, and that's what I'm saying. That part goes along with being confident with your call and making it emphatically so that there isn't doubt or you don't place doubt in anyone's mind.
I mean, that's a big part of it. Now, these guys are backed up by replay and so forth, and that's a big help. It's a bigger help than ever before in this, that they are backed up by replay. Makes a big difference. But I see the hesitancy. It is something that will affect the game. It is something that fans are going to notice. They're going to notice.
Is there any truth to the post that I saw in the Huffington Post that the NFL is getting replacement referees from the Lingerie Football League?
Oh, I have no idea. I don't know. I don't really.
I mean, I saw that. And
I could care less how the preseason's officiated.
But I thought that was definitely an interesting marketing idea.
But this is where, I tell you right now, this is where the fans should care about the preseason, the way it's being officiated. The preseason is where the NFL establishes points of emphasis that then cleans up the regular season. And that's not being done right now. Okay, you'll see in the preseason, certain penalties are called in the preseason. They are establishing in the preseason games points of emphasis. And then when it gets to the regular season, that usually gets cleaned up because you've had four games of points of emphasis to point it out to you. That's another part that's being missed out in all this. Mike Wallace looks to return by week one. Once a long-term contract has it signed, his tender offer from the Steelers expected to report to the team before the regular season begins. Steelers refuse to negotiate with Wallace on a new deal until he shows up and signs a one-year, $2.7 million tender. Disgraceful, outrageous money.
Here's an idea. Sign it now. Move on. Then talk about a deal.
So, Antonio Brown got a 5-year, $42.5 million deal. Wallace is averaging 57 catches per season and a little more than 1,000 yards, 18.7 yards a catch, 24 touchdowns in 3 years. That's 8 touchdowns a year. Last year, 1,193 yards, tailed off at the end, I should say. He was 11th in the NFL, 21 yards per catch. In 2010 was tops. Through October last year, 43 catches, 800 yards, 5 touchdowns. After that, did not have a single 100-yard receiving game after October 23rd. Did not have a touchdown in seven of his final 8 games. And the playoff loss to Denver, a scintillating 3-catch, 26-yard performance with the money on the table.
Now, Antonio Brown's deal, that wasn't all guaranteed money, though, was it?
Never is.
Yeah, I didn't think.
We've talked about this how many times now? Okay? If you sign a contract with Major League Baseball, every dime is guaranteed. 5 years, $42.5 million for a player, that player, no matter what. Okay, they go off a cliff, can't play, $42.5 million over 5 years. Play every day, all 162 games in the 5-year deal. Okay? You know, that's so you end up playing 925, 30 games in that 5 years. You get all $42.5 million. Don't play a game, you get $42.5 million. Drew Brees contract, perfect example. 5-year, $100 million contract. Wow, he got $100 million. No, he didn't. He's going to get $40 million this year, $10 million next year, $10 million the year after. That $60 million is absolutely guaranteed. He is not guaranteed the final $40 million. He must make the team.
See, Brown.
And don't snicker, oh, it's Drew Brees, he'll make the team. Peyton Manning got hurt last year and missed the entire season.
I was going to say, injury in the preseason can make that difference.
Yep.
Brown's deal is a signing bonus of 8.5 plus a base salary of $540,000 in 2012. 2.5 roster bonus in 13 and a $2 million base salary. In 2014, it goes to $6 million, stays at $6 million in 15 before going to 8.25 in 16 and 8.71 in 17.
Right.
So obviously, other than the bonus for signing of 8.5, most of that money is not going to be seen before, you know, like 2014.
And I laughed so hard when I saw this story today. Jeff Demps, who, of course, was on the silver medal relay team in the Olympics, hopes to go to an NFL team. I laughed. Right? The dude's played football at Florida all these years. He played against Penn State, for goodness sakes. Of course he wants to go to the NFL. They made it seem like it was a big decision. What's the decision?
There's not too many professional relay teams.
Yeah, I mean... I mean, yeah, Demp's eyes, NFL. No kidding, really? I mean, I watched him run the Olympics. I kept thinking, okay, now when's he going to go to an NFL camp?
Yeah, but can he catch? That's the question.
Can he catch?
He can run. Can he do anything else? That's my point.
Well, I mean, you know what? Rainey was the one that they used out of the backfield at Florida. Okay? But Demp's is very valuable as a running back, and he also is a very dangerous kickoff return guy. He averaged almost 29 yards kick return in his career. That's a 4-year average of 29. Okay? So he can do that.
He's gonna, would he be in? Well, let's see. Who was the most famous track to
Bob
football?
Hayes.
Really? I was thinking Nehemiah, but
Bob Hayes
was more successful.
Bob Hayes. But right. It's not even close.
I agree.
Bob Hayes.
Nehemiah first.
100-meter champ, Tokyo, 1964. 100 meters, fastest human. Went to the Cowboys. Had really a really, really good career in the NFL. Nehemiah was no.
Was Nehemiah a hurdler?
Yes, he was a hurdler.
Okay.
110-meter hurdles. I think he was like 13-2 or something like that in the 100-meter hurdles. Bob Hayes, world's fastest human, NFL, long career with the Cowboys. Long career with the Cowboys. I mean, that one isn't even close.
By the way, if you were thinking I was tongue-in-cheek with the reference to the Lingerie Football League, there is a Lingerie Football League.
Look, I don't care if they get them from Joe's Bar and Grill down in Danville. They're not replacing them. Let's see. The late Bob Hayes. Let's see. Round 7 pick, Cowboys, debuted 65. Last played with the Niners, played 9 years with the Cowboys. Three-time Pro Bowl selection, 65, 66, 67. Two-team, first-team All-Pro, 66 and 68. Second-team All-Pro, 65, 67. On the Cowboys that won Super Bowl VI, he's in the Cowboys Ring of Honor, Pro Football Hall of Fame 2009. 10.06, Tokyo Olympics, 1964. Ran in lane one, which had been chewed up in the 10-kilometer race walk. It was a cinder track he ran on, a cinder track at 10.06. Was running on borrowed spikes because one of his shoes had been kicked under the bed when he was playing with some friends and didn't realize until he got to the track.
You're kidding me.
He had a second gold medal in the 4x100 relay, which produced at that time a world record of 36.06. Again, cinder track, so don't start comparing it to what Usain Bolt did. His come-from-behind win for the U.S. team in the relay was one of the more memorable Olympic moments. Someone had made the comment from France, you can't win, all you have is Bob Hayes. Meanwhile, Paul Drayton said, that's all we need.
Yeah, looking at some of the numbers, you know, 10 years in the NFL, 71 touchdowns. Skeets, 3 years, 4 touchdowns.
I'm sure there are 4 really good ones.
They were really fast.
Yeah.
Leapt over a few guys to get to the end zone, too.
But no doubt, Bob Hayes, easily.
I'd completely forgot about that when I was trying to think back to anybody who had, those that had switched to the NFL. Nehemiah was the first one to come to mind, but I'd forgotten about that.
Bob Hayes. That's why I'm here.
That's why you're here.
Filling gaps. Number 22, Bob Hayes. Throw the ball up, run underneath it, touchdown. Drive you nuts.
71 times.
71 times he did it. Bullet Bob Hayes. All right, bottom of the hour, news coming up. Kevin, meanwhile, will put his feet up and start wondering why pentathletes can't play in the NFL. It's time to let the Olympics get smaller in the rear mirror. We'll come back with news, bottom of the hour, News Radio 1070 WKOK, then Murray Chass.
Homeowners and business owners, listen up. What if you can make an investment in something that will never lose its incredible value? Invest in the most abundant commodity there is, sunshine. Lenape Solar can show you how an investment in a photovoltaic or solar thermal energy system can pay you back through saving money and energy with a great rate of return. In fact, an investment in solar energy pays it forward to your great-grandchildren and to our planet's future. Lenape Solar is your trusted local source for solar energy and energy efficiency solutions. Experts in renewable energy legislation and incentives. Professional, certified installers. Take the path towards energy independence by investing in solar energy with Lenape Solar. This is Justin Charles, and I invite you to schedule your free energy consultation today by calling 570-286-1496, visiting Lenape Solar at 140 South 2nd Street in Sunbury, or find us online at lenapesolar.com.
Gas pains have you down. Sunbury Motors Kia has the cure. If you haven't noticed, gas prices are on the rise again. Well, Sunbury Motors Kia has the largest inventory of high MPG Kias that they've had all year. There's over 50 to choose from. Check out the 35 MPG 2012 Kia Soul, starting at $14,925. The amazing 2012 Optima Hybrid with 40 MPG, starting at $25,705. The built in the USA 32 MPG 2013 Sereno SUV, starting at an incredible $21,960. Every new Kia comes with a 10-year 100,000-mile limited powertrain warranty and a 5-year 60,000-mile basic warranty. And at Sunbury Motors Kia, you get an extra set of tires. Sunbury Motors Kia on the Strip in Hummel's Wharf. And at sunburymotors.com.
Kia Soul and certain Optima GDI models are assembled in the United States from U.S. and globally sourced parts.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, welcome back. Great to have you with us. Another sterling day for Kevin on the, as again, the only person in America outside of the Today Show that has been able to drag the Olympics into the week.
Matt Lauer does a good job.
They're running second to Good Morning America. They need to.
Wonder if they did better that week. Because I know I gave them a few more minutes than I'd normally do.
I don't give them many minutes of anything. Okay.
Listen, a television in your house is the biggest waste of money.
No, it's not.
Except during football season and basketball.
No, it's not. No, it's not. What
was the last show you watched?
Last show I watched?
Yeah. What was the last television program you watched?
I mean, show?
Yeah.
I mean, there are a lot of things I watch during the course of the year.
No, that's not sports-oriented.
Yeah, I'll watch, like, I'll watch every once in a while Big Bang Theory. Every once in a while I'll watch, I stopped really watching Two and a Half Men. Let's see. Wednesday night, if I'm home on a Wednesday night, Criminal Minds. I'll definitely watch that.
Aren't they all CBS shows?
Well, I'm just whatever's there. Yeah, but I mean, I watched 24 faithfully for years.
Oh, okay. I wondered if you were watching just because that was the first channel that popped up on your TV. That's what I was. It was starting to get a little too strange that they were all CBS programs.
No, I'll watch a lot of movies, things like that. Look, certain things that have happened around here in the last 9 months have soured me on the credibility of what I'm watching on television.
Well, yeah, that goes in the sports realm of what you're watching on television, that's for sure.
No, I'm just even in general news reporting. I mean, you know, I've watched it. If you teach a class in this, it is an expose in sheep and laziness.
Your class is going to be really entertaining come this fall.
No, I'm not, but I'm not going to talk about that stuff. I've got other stuff to talk about. When I teach my class, I'm talking about technique. I'm talking about getting ready, about being prepared, about so forth. When you sit down to do an interview, I may bring up a couple things that have happened interview-wise, but the kind of questions that you should be looking for and the kind of research you need to be doing, especially when you're going in blind. Okay? And, you know, I do a lot of interviews on this show. And I try to be as prepared as possible with the various topics I've dealt with. Because, look, I have talked on this show about football, basketball, quad skulls, field hockey, soccer. I mean, all over the map. Hockey. I mean, I've tried, you know, in a wide variety of topics here. I mean, this show has not been a one-trick pony.
No.
Okay? It hasn't been. You know, so, I mean, that's what I'm trying to, you know, make the point of. I mean, why do I want to watch the Today Show after I watched Michael Isikoff do nothing in front of a courthouse for weeks and basically just not basically do his job? Why do I want to watch that show?
It's a lot of live because, for the sake of live in news anymore.
No, because if he can't do a good job on a topic that I have some base knowledge on, then what's he telling me on a topic I have no knowledge on?
That's a scary thought.
Uh-huh. Okay. Uh-huh. You wonder why they have a big problem. Because they're lazy and they're sheep. Okay? If you break away from the pack, you're a villain. If you break away from the pack. That's a big problem. You take away a lot of independence. Okay? A lot of independence is taken away if somebody has the guts to break away from the pack and not be a sheep. And say, wait a minute, something's not quite right here. All right. Well, somebody that has never delved into that area and has always been independent on his own, doesn't believe in sabermetrics at all, old friend Lou Prado of Murray Chass. Murray went to Pitt. Lou went to Penn State and became fast friends over 50 years ago. Lou helped, by the way, set this up. Murray, welcome to the show. I want to ask you, you follow baseball every day. You're a traditionalist. What do you think about this one-game playoff for the wild card?
For years, the commissioner said there would not be an additional wild card. But he changed his mind, as he has on many things that he said he wouldn't do. But, you know, if they wanted to add, well, what they saw was that the wild card was good for baseball. What we're seeing now is, with the second wild card in each league, that a lot more teams are still in competition for these spots. I have a problem with it because I don't like the fact that wild card detracts from the division races. If two teams are fighting for first place, it probably doesn't matter which one finishes first and which second, because the one that finishes second will very likely be a wild card. But the just the idea of more teams in the races. I mean, right now you can look at both leagues and see close races, and it's good for the fans because more teams are competing, remain in competition for playoff spots, and they that will draw more fans to the ballpark in August and September, which was the whole idea of this thing. You know, I think certainly two wild cards in each league are enough. The idea of a one-game playoff, I understand the reason for it. One thing is it gives teams incentive to win the division, you know, which negates my problem with wild card detracting from the division races. Nobody wants to risk making the playoffs, but then dropping out one game into them. And I'm not sure how else they could do it. If they had a three-game playoff, best of three, the other teams, the division winners, would have too much time off. That could either benefit them or hurt them. Depending on how their pitching lines up. One thing I certainly hope is that baseball will not add any more to them. You know, the one-game playoff might turn out to be very intriguing, but there are so many different problems, you know, using your best pitcher either to get into the playoffs or to win that wild card game, and not having him available until maybe the third game of the five-game division series. Although I think it's not even five anymore. I guess it's seven.
Seven, yeah.
Yeah, but there's no question it will have an impact on what happens throughout the postseason.
Yeah, in fact, you may have to use your best pitcher to qualify for it to begin with, and you could be in a situation of not having Dennis Eckersley instead of having Mike Torres for your one-game playoff.
Right.
So, live that already in my life. So, now, we talked about the playoff because I asked you about it. Do you like the state of the game today, Murray? And, of course, a lot of people are talking about more instant replay. Do you like the state of the game as to the way it is now, or are a couple of changes needed to make the game better?
Look, if it were up to me, I'd probably go back to what it used to be. But I guess I'm what is called a traditionalist.
But to me, it's okay to answer it that way. If you think the game was better a different way, I'd like to hear your reasons for it and outline it for us, because if that's how you feel, then I think that's important that people get your perspective because you've seen so much baseball.
Well, look, you know, I grew up in the era of 16 teams, eight in each league. There are now 30 teams, three divisions in each league. There's nothing wrong with that except the eight-team leagues were very competitive because of expansion. players aren't all as good as they used to be. There were bad players, no question. We can't fool ourselves. The Philadelphia Athletics and the St. Louis Browns had some pretty bad players.
Yes.
And they were pretty bad teams. But you can't possibly have the strength of players that there were in those days because there are, you know, twice as many players. You have 14 more teams. But yet the game has spread across the country, which is good. Until the Dodgers and Giants went to California, baseball stopped at the Mississippi River. So that part of it is good. And to do that, you need more teams. There are some teams that probably, some cities probably never should have been given teams. I have written a couple of times in recent years that baseball would do well to cut Florida off its map. Neither team was drawing any fans. Tampa Bay happened to be a very good organization after a while, after a long time. Right now they're one of the best organizations. They know how to build a team. The Marlins got a new stadium, but they're not doing anything with it. I mean, they're not a very good team. If you substitute the Rays in some other city that isn't doing well, it'd probably be better. But that's not going to happen. The idea of having those teams in Florida and not doing well financially, I think, hurts baseball. If the Marlins do wind up doing well financially, it would be only because of the new ballpark. The Rays desperately need a new park, and it doesn't look like they're going to get it.
Right.
But there's nowhere for anybody to move because I don't think there are any other cities that could support a team. It's been said before that the best location would be in northern New Jersey, but the Yankees and the Mets, whose territory New Jersey is, would never allow that to happen. So,
just like Oakland right now would be prohibited from moving to San Jose.
Exactly.
Because that's a Giants territory.
Yeah, that's something that has bothered me now for a long time because the Giants have that territory only because the then Oakland owner, Walter Haas Jr., gave it to them.
Right.
It was like New Jersey, a joint territory, and the Giants were talking about wanting to move to Santa Clara, which is in San Jose, or Santa Clara County, which San Jose is also in. And
that's where the 49ers have their office.
Right. And the Giants asked the Athletics to give them permission to go to Santa Clara, and Walter Haas, being a good man and understanding the importance of this, also, you know, he knew it would figure the San Francisco-Oakland area out for him. Anyway, he said okay, and so the National League owners voted that territory to be the Giants. Well, now that the Athletics want to move, the Giants refuse to let them, say that's our territory. it's unfortunate because, I mean, I think the Athletics would do a good job in San Jose. I think it's a good area, but it's not going to happen.
I have one final question for you. You've done, you know, when you work on a beat, you know, you do a lot of stories about a lot of athletes and a lot of biographies about a lot of athletes. They may be in a column form, it may be in a story form, but you still do a lot of biographies. Is there anybody along the way that pleasantly surprised you in a fascinating way that when you were done writing about that individual, you said, wow, I didn't know all that, and it's changed my perception of them?
Well, the thing that comes to mind immediately was my initial impression of Alex Rodriguez. I spoke to him in spring training after his rookie season, and when I was finished talking to him, I called my wife and I said, I just found us another child. I was so impressed with him. I couldn't believe that this young guy could be the way he was. But subsequently, I have learned that Alex does a very good job. I don't want to, conning people might be a too strong a phrase, but Alex was very smart and knew how to deal with people, reporters, talk to them, and so forth. He's not the person I thought he was. So that's a sort of a negative surprise.
Right. I've been around those kind of athletes, believe me. They charm you.
Yeah, well, there's no bigger charmer than Alex was in his early years.
Is there a positive one?
Harder about that one.
I'm not surprised.
It's a hard one to have another negative, but I'm not going to mention his name.
That's fine.
Nothing comes to mind immediately.
That's interesting.
I'm sure there have been some, but I'd have to think about it.
Murray, it was an absolute pleasure having you on. Thanks for the time you gave us, and now you can tell Prado, you know, point blank, says, "All right, you owe me on that one."
Well, listen, any time I have enjoyed it, and I will do it again because any friend of Lou Prado is a friend of mine.
Murray Chass, thanks so much. We'll come back with more on News Radio 1070 WKOK after this. Like I said, you have to do a lot of interviews on a show like this. A lot of interviews. And you asked me about not watching much morning television. I'm sorry, but, you know, if you're lazy, I don't want to watch you. I don't.
Well, my question is,
I watched somebody interviewed on Outside the Lines that was never asked about how she handled the 2005 incident, was never asked about cutting Thon back in her to 24 hours, which is what she won, was not asked why the 2005 incident led to 2007, was not asked who hired her at the University of Connecticut, and was not asked whether she had conversations with that same individual during all this.
Well, I'm also comfortable saying
that. It was hailed as a great interview.
Well, I'm also comfortable saying that person didn't do 7 interviews in 5 days either that they had to prep for. So there was plenty of time to find that information and research it.
Well, I do 7 interviews in 5 days.
Not necessarily 3 of them in the same day, though.
Sure I do.
Sometimes.
I mean, tomorrow I'm going to have a guest. I'm going to have 2 guests on tomorrow. Then I'm going to go over and interview somebody after football. Then I'm going to do a pregame show for baseball and a postgame show for baseball.
No Criminal Minds for you tomorrow.
No, but that's in one day. I'm sorry, but I can't. I'm sick of watching lazy people who don't try.